In this episode of Dietitians Only, we're talking about PN ingredient shortages. Crafting parental nutrition orders is challenging enough without the added pressure of PN ingredient shortages. For over 30 years, dietitians and nutrition support professionals have dealt with product shortages. This can create a wave of complications for your PN patients. So tune in to find out what you can do to weather this storm.
You're listening to Dietitians Only, a podcast from Dietitians on Demand, created by dietitians for dietitians. Let's get into it.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Dietitians Only. Today, I will be hosting Sarah Heitzman, Regional Account Manager for Dietitians on Demand, and we have our Sarah Glanz here, Director of Clinical Education. Today, we're talking about coping with shortages of parental nutrition supplies. This is a fairly common problem, and ingredient availability waxes and wanes. It can definitely create challenges when trying to prescribe parental nutrition regimens that meet the needs of your patients. In today's episode, we hope to shed some light on this concern and give you tips on what you can do to ensure your patients are getting everything they need. So when we're talking about this, what do we mean when we say shortages of parental nutrition ingredients?
That's a great question. So just to give you a little bit of history on this issue, when we talk about ingredients, we're talking about like the macronutrient solution. So your dextrose, amino acids, and even the lipid emulsions. Also the trace elements, typically those are bundled products. So they're called MTE, multi-trace elements. And then also your multivitamin injection. So any or all of those can be, you know, in short supply. But just to give you a little bit of history on this, there are only a few manufacturers of PN ingredients. And if you think about some of the brands that you're familiar with, you can maybe think of like 3 to 4 companies. And so there are no secret companies that you're not aware of. Those are literally the only ones. And so when one manufacturer falls behind or has some kind of supply issues or issues in their manufacturing plant, it can really have a serious impact on the entire supply chain.
Yeah, definitely. Why is this such a persistent problem these days?
Well, yeah, so persistent is the key word. So Sarah and I are about the same age, been practicing for about the same amount of time as dietitians, and probably we have never known a time that there has not been a shortage of some type of PN ingredient. When I first started in my internship, I was taught to write TPN orders during a lipid shortage. And so I was taught to basically ration lipids, and that kind of stuck, that mentality really stuck with me. But there have been consistent shortages of some type of PN ingredient since the 1980s. So this is not a new issue. Most dietitians that are still in practice today are like the two of us, that we've never known a time that there hasn't been at least one type of shortage. And there are a lot of reasons why this has been going on for so long, and why we have shortages of one thing and then we get that back in supply, then another thing goes out on shortage. So one reason, like I mentioned a couple minutes ago, is just that we have so very few manufacturers of PN supplies. And so, like I said, when we're looking at, you know, 2 or 3 manufacturers, if one of them goes offline or one of them has some sort of ingredient shortage, then that's really going to impact the entire supply chain. You know, when we're cutting down our resources by a half or a third, obviously that's going to make a huge impact. Another reason is that all of these are sterile injectables, as you know. So these companies and these manufacturing plants have extremely high quality standards when it comes to the manufacture of these ingredients. They have complicated production techniques. Again, in my internship, I remember the hospital that where I was, we outsourced parental nutrition compounding to CAPS. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of that, but it's I think it stands for Central Admixture Pharmacy Services or something like that. But we actually got to go to CAPS and see how they produce the TPN. And if anyone's ever seen the movie E.T., where like they have the house in complete quarantine and everything, it was like that. And you have people in like full on head to toe hazmat suits, like that is, everything is completely sterile. You know, they're It's like, it's crazy.
That's so cool.
It's crazy. So just imagine, you know, doing that on like a high, what would you call it? Like high capacity or like high
mass.
Yeah. So yeah. It's just
like mass production. Yeah,
such a large production operation. So it's complicated. That's part of the reason why we sometimes see these shortages. Another reason is that there's no therapeutic alternative to some of these ingredients. So if you think about other medications like diabetes medications or antibiotics, if one of them is unavailable, there are a dozen or more other drugs with, you know, more or less the same action, mechanism of action that can treat the same condition. But when we're looking at PN supplies, that's really not the case. So, you know, like, for example, if you're looking at like a specialized amino acid solution or a particular lipid emulsion, there is no alternative. Like, that's it. That's the only thing that's like that. So
right. When
there's no alternative, when we lose access to that particular product, there's really nothing we can substitute.
It reminds me a little bit of what happened a year or two ago with the formula shortages, but there were alternatives and it still caused, I feel like, mass chaos in trying to get, you know, I saw some, yeah, it was just really hard for people to get the appropriate formulas for their kids. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's such a great point to bring up because it's very much the same issue that when you have only a few players of this game. And so when you take one out, it does have a huge, it, you know, creates this huge impact, like a dent.
Yeah.
This huge vacancy in the market. So yeah, that's a great point. So speaking about like supply and demand, when we do see a spike in demand, sometimes the supply can't really keep up. So if there's a change in, just in demand, that can even create a shortage downstream. So that's something that you may not really think about, but can also have a big impact when we're talking about such limited production capacity.
Right.
Also, these companies that produce parenteral nutrition supplies, they typically produce other drugs as well. It's not like they exclusively produce PN ingredients and nothing else. So when there's a new product that comes on the market, maybe something that is like has a little bit more demand than a PN ingredient or is more lucrative to produce and sell, that can, you know, cramp their style when it comes to producing their PN ingredients. Also, we've seen natural disasters have an impact, surprisingly enough. So a few years ago, it was probably been like, I don't know, 5 to 7 years ago when Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico, one of the big manufacturers and companies, producers of PN supplies actually has a manufacturing plant in Puerto Rico. And so their manufacturing plant suffered damage. And if you remember, they were without power for a long time in Puerto Rico. It was a major thing. But of course, that facility couldn't operate for a while. And so again, when you take out one of like three players, it really creates a big impact. Yeah. And then also one thing is almost like a self-limiting, self-limiting limitation. I can't think of another word. Self-limiting limitation is FDA approval and facility approval of different products. So if you keep up with like the nutrition support literature, you probably know that there are some PN products that are approved and currently in use in Europe or other countries that we do not use in the United States. Yep. And so we kind of limit our own options with that. So even when there are potentially other lipid products that we can use or other amino acid products that we can use, we don't have FDA approval for those. So they're out there, but we can't use them in the United States. And then even on a smaller scale, and maybe a little bit more relatable scale, a lot of healthcare facilities have contracts with specific companies, specific brands, and they have specific items on the formulary. So sometimes it can be a whole song and dance to get products added and products approved, even when you are in a time of critical shortage. So to sum it up, it's a really a multifactorial issue, but it's something that there's not really one good solution for, unfortunately. It's a complicated issue. Hey there, would you love this episode even more if you could earn continuing education credit? This episode has been approved for a half hour CE credit, so be sure to check the show notes for an opportunity to claim your credit.
So what problems do these shortages create for dietitians in the field who are crafting parental nutrition orders?
Well, like I said, it really can have a big impact. It almost seems like something, you know, we live in the United States, a country of abundance.
Yeah.
And it sometimes seems hard to fathom that we can't get the things that we need. But of course, going through the pandemic, we all experienced that with like toilet paper. And, you know, I remember going to the store and like all the meat is gone. Mm-hmm. So that is a reality, unfortunately. But many clinicians have never known a time without these shortages. Like I talked about for myself, my own experience, I have never practiced in a facility or in an era where there has not been some type of shortage, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So a lot of clinicians have basically just adapted to this shortage mentality that something isn't here or something
going to be missing.
Yeah. Something is missing. Something is in short supply. And so it just creates this like mentality and need to ration the supplies and prioritize which patients receive these limited supplies. But as far as what, you know, what can the effects of these shortages be? Sometimes it can actually create some nutrient deficiencies that dietitians really need to be hypervigilant about and really be focused and aware that these things could happen. So when we talk about nutrient deficiencies, one thing is micronutrient deficiencies. At times there are shortages of the multivitamin or like the multi-trace element supplies. So one time I had a patient who she was a bariatric surgery gone wrong, and she came to us and we started her on TPN. We found out that she had a copper deficiency. But because she was on TPN, there wasn't really a whole lot we could do because we were on shortage of, you know, the multivitamin and the multi-trace element ingredients. And so it was sort of like, well, we can give you the standard daily amount so we can kind of like keep you stable, but we really couldn't do a whole lot to replete her at that time. Another thing is essential fatty acid deficiencies. And of course, this occurs when we're not providing at least the minimum recommended amount of lipids. And so, like I talked about, whenever I learned to write TPN orders, it was during a time of lipid shortage. And what we were doing, we were ordering 50 grams of lipids twice a week for all patients, which is really like the minimum to get by, the minimum to prevent an essential fatty acid deficiency. And so, you know, it's just one of those things that you kind of have to be aware that these possibilities are out there, that like, this is real. You could potentially have a patient with essential fatty acid deficiency or a micronutrient deficiency. And what I would say is just be familiar with the screening, like what would you potentially order to check for this if the need presented itself? What are some of the physical symptoms or manifestations of some of these deficiencies? So maybe you could just be BOLO. You could be on the lookout for some of these deficiencies, and then you can act by, you know, ordering the test if you suspect that something might be there. But another issue that we sort of start to see with dietitians who practice in these times of shortages, it's just the added stress and pressure of not wanting to waste anything.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And it's like, don't we have enough to worry about? But even where I work, PRN, currently the hospital where I work, PRN, we have gone through recently an amino acid shortage. And so we would always communicate, the dietitian team, we would communicate every morning, like, okay, who has a TPN? How many grams of amino acids are you putting in your bag? How many are you putting in your bag?
Wow.
And we were doing that essentially so we could be very judicial about, okay, here are how many grams are in a, like the parent bag of amino acids that our patient bags are going to be made from. So we wanted to make sure that we could get as close to that amount with that. It's like the Price is Right. Like you want to get as close as you can without going over. Because we don't want to open a brand new bag just to use like 10 grams of amino acids and then throw the rest away. So just communicating, you know, even something as simple as just communicating with the rest of your team and letting them know like, hey, I can decrease by 10 grams just so we don't have to go over, you know, or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, great. So what are some of the strategies dietitians can use to navigate these shortages?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think navigating, and unfortunately, this is just a fact of life. I don't think that this is going to be resolved anytime soon. So I think as dietitians, we basically just need to accept that this is reality.
Yeah.
And this is probably going to be reality for the foreseeable future. You know, what can we do to all work together to make sure that not just the patients in our specific facilities have the resources that they need, but like all patients have what they need, and trying to be ethical and good stewards of those limited resources. So one thing that Aspen recommends is to ration only when you have to, which for me is a very difficult concept to agree to.
Yeah.
not agree to, but like it's a hard concept for me to understand. I am a very frugal person by nature. Like sometimes I reuse my Ziploc bags.
I do all the time.
So in my mind, I just feel like if I could maybe restrict the, you know, if I could limit or just cut back a little bit, maybe we wouldn't have a shortage, you know, like maybe if we all rationed a little bit, we wouldn't have a shortage, but apparently that's not best practice. So I need to stop doing that. But so ration only when you need to, if the shortage and the allocation limitations are lifted, then you can go back to prescribing full doses of things. Also follow the minimum dosing guidelines from Aspen or other, you know, whoever is like recommending macro and micronutrient recommendations for your patient population, you need to be sure to provide at least the minimum. And it's disappointing that we have to talk about like, well, you have to do at least the minimum, but sometimes that is really all you can do is just give the minimum. Also, don't give pediatric products to an adult population, because this is like robbing Peter to pay Paul. So a good example of this is the multivitamin injection. So you may work in a facility that serves both adults and pediatrics. And if you have an abundance of the pediatric multivitamin, but you don't have a lot of the adult multivitamin, you should not take the pediatric multivitamin and give it to the adults, because that's eventually just going to create a downstream shortage of the pediatric multivitamin. So make sure that you're giving adult products only to adults, pediatric products only to pediatrics. You can also kind of get creative with your feeding regimens. One thing that I've gotten into the habit of doing is doing a 7-day average for like all of my parenteral nutrition orders for 7 days. I basically take the average, like what's the average calories we're giving, what's the average protein we're giving, what's the average lipids, et cetera. So what this does is you kind of assume that like, okay, on some days I'm going to go a little high, other days I'm going to go a little low. But when it's all said and done, like on the 7-day average, we did pretty good. If that makes sense.
We were trained to do that with lipids.
Right.
I think because we were interns at around the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So like a lot of hospitals during these times of shortage will enact a protocol that's like, you can only give lipids on Mondays and Thursdays or something like that. So you just kind of have to realize like, okay, on Mondays and Thursdays, I might be overfeeding just slightly, but on the rest of the days, it's going to come out in the wash. Mm-hmm. Another thing you can do is supplement if you can enterally or orally. So like if a patient is able to take any sort of micronutrient supplementation, you know, enterally, or maybe they could take like an additional protein enterally or MCT oil or something like that. If there are other ways that you can provide these nutrients other than through the TPN or PN bag, that's always an option too. Unfortunately, sometimes when things get really dicey, you may have to prioritize the patients who are going to need PN long-term. And they need to have a, they need to get preference for some of these ingredients. So if you think about like, if you have a patient who is only going to need PN for 5 to 7 days, is it really matter if, you know, maybe they don't get the multivitamin every day?
Right.
But if you have somebody who's on PN and has been on PN for 10 years, it really does make a difference if they don't get it.
Yeah.
So you sometimes, unfortunately, you do have to prioritize who really needs it the most, which is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. We talked about wasting PN ingredients. So again, just do your best not to waste anything, you know, waste not, want not. And also part of that is just critically evaluating who really needs PN in the first place. Trying to stop doing the inappropriate TPN orders, which was a crusade of mine for a while in my first job. But
yeah,
you know, try not to use these critical resources unless absolutely necessary. And then the thing that I would recommend to all dietitians is to stay in the loop with news and updates. I will say Aspen does a really good job of being kind of like a megaphone for some of these companies. Like when they put out a product update or they put out like a client communication, I mean, are you really going to hear from some of these manufacturing yeah. companies? Probably not. But you will hear from Aspen. And so Aspen does a great job of trying to disseminate this information. So if you're not an Aspen member, you can still like follow them on Facebook or follow them on LinkedIn, because they do put out those. I just saw one yesterday, actually about a lipid emulsion. I was like, this is great timing. We're doing a podcast. But yeah, they just put out an update on one of the lipid emulsions yesterday, and they put it out via social media. So even if you're not a member, you can still follow them. It's free and it's a great way to get some of this information.
Awesome.
So yeah, I think that wraps it up for today. This is, like I said, this is a topic that affects all dietitians and is probably going to continue to affect us for the foreseeable future, but it's something that is manageable and we can all get through it if we work together. We do have some good resources in the show notes as far as like some of the recommendations from Aspen that go into a little bit more detail. So be sure to check that out. But otherwise, we're going to sign off for today and we will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Dietitians Only, a podcast produced by Dietitians On Demand. If you need a break today, scroll over to the review section of the podcast and leave us one. Your feedback is the best way to help the podcast grow. Dietitians On Demand employs hundreds of dietitians nationwide and elevates the profession with simple yet effective practice resources, like this podcast. Don't forget to stay connected with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.